Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Not everyone thinks like you. To be honest, if you are a homo technicus, only a very few think like you. This is a statement of Alan Cooper, authors of an excellent book on usability, user experience, persona development. It's called The Inmates Are Running the Asylum and How to Restore the Sanity. I totally love this book, and I think this statement is totally true. I mean, we as developers, as people that think about technology, that think in technology, that develop technology, that make technology ready, market ready, we have quite a different way of thinking, a different kind of thinking. And on the other side, we have the users that have a different kind of thinking. And I'm making different kinds of episodes in the Human Technology Podcast. So there are all these technology episodes, the future episodes, the trends and perspective episodes, the automotive industry episodes. I have interview episodes every now and then. And talking about this, I realized that I haven't done an interview for quite some time, but they're a part of this. And then there are the episodes where I talk about the development process, how to develop an HMI, a human-machine interface, the methods, the tools, how you do this. And today's episode is one of these. It is about usability testing. It is about how do we ensure the quality of our work. How do we get feedback from our potential users? How do we collect it? How do we analyze it, and how do we use it? And that is the thing I want to talk about today. And it will be a pretty big episode. I will split it into two. So you have one today, and then there will be another one in 2 weeks from now. So why usability testing? Why do I think it's so important? The big danger is that if we are really involved into this development of HMIs, of technologies, we may develop the wrong quality criteria. We understand very well how a product or how a service works. And we develop this understanding with our technical minds. And we are, since we know it inside out, it everything seems so easy to us. And I had this when one of the project leaders of a client showed up, and he did super crazy things with his HMI and showed me, hey, it's so easy, come on, have a look at it. And then he did this and this and this and that and did crazy and strange things, but it took him a few seconds to do something. And with that, he believed, he proved, this is a great HMI, I can do this. And I needed to tell him that he can do this, but no one else can do this. And this is the reason why we need usability studies, where we need usability feedback from our potential users out of the field. So it is a quality control. It tells us where we stand with our development, how good we are, and where is room for improvement, where are the chances to get something, a product, a service, a car, a smartphone, an app, a website that is accepted by the users, that is used by the users, that is loved by the users. And in case you are, for example, selling through your website, gives you a large amount of sales on this. My experience is these studies are often not planned. So you have a project plan of a development, all right, we start with the analysis and then we go into the development. And once we have this, then we get into the realization and everything is planned out, maybe even on a weekly basis for a project that takes a year or two. But there is very often not a usability study planned. They are sometimes simply forgotten, and sometimes they are unwanted because they bring up the truth on the development. Nobody wants to hear this kind of truth. So UX, UI developers often feel controlled when they need to perform a usability study or a user experience study, and or if somebody else does this. So they feel that their competence is questioned, which I believe is totally nonsense. I mean, every piece of technology and any aspect is tested and it's tried out. And so why not the HMI? Why not the usability and the user experience of a product? So it should be tested. So to summarize this one, UX studies, usability studies are essential if you want to bring a well usable and successful product to the market. In this episode, I will talk about the six steps of a usability study. I will run through these six steps and explain what do you do on each of these steps. Then I will talk about the three different types of studies that you can do. I will talk about the three different levels of data collection. And at the very end, I will give you five tips and tricks for a successful usability study. Let's start like in any, let's say, scientific or knowledge-based podcast episode with a definition. So what is a usability study? It is an empirical method for determining usability. You confront the users, the potential users, with different tasks and scenarios. And then you determine the quality of the HMI by direct and indirect measurements. That's how it runs. You set up a situation where you have a number of well-selected tasks and scenarios. You confront your users and then you do your measurements. You analyze these measurements. You do maybe a statistical analysis. We will talk about this later. And report this to your client, to your bosses. And yeah, that's basically how you do it. I usually differentiate between a usability study, which is a pretty scientific project. It is bigger, has a larger number of participants. It is planned, it is controlled. It is under laboratory or very well controlled conditions usually. It is a data collection that allows statistic analysis, so that you have a very solid result out of that. Opposed to that, we have usability tests, or quick and dirty usability testing. This is usually with a lower number of participants and with a lower control and a lower strategic data collection and analysis. this is when you go out and say, hey, come on, I have this beautiful app here. Can you play around with it and give me your feedback? Or can you show me how you want to do this and this with this app? And you just watch these people. And I mean, this is the quick and dirty approach with a usability test. You get a lot of information out of these quick and dirty things, and they're very flexible. You can just go out and do it. A usability study is a larger effort that requires more planning and more thinking and is more time consuming. And then you have usability analysis. Usability tests are empirical, meaning you go out, you have your participants, you collect data, you analyze this one, so it's empirical. Usability analysis is analytical, as the word already says, and it is performed by experts, usually external experts that you pull in, that have a look and that use their background to give you a judgment on your product. So if you have a situation where you believe maybe we are wrong with what we do, or there is a lot of discussion going on a certain feature, on a certain HMI that we develop at the moment, give me a call. I jump in. I give you a quick analysis on what's going on. My opinion, backed up by almost 40 years of experience, which is then a non-empirical thing, but also give you a pretty good feedback. So usability studies and usability tests are always empirical. You confront users with tasks, and then you measure parts of their behavior. A usability study ensures quality. It gives you the feeling, it gives you a solid ground to stand on, so that you can say, all right, we have had 50 users in, 80% of them said that this feature is easy to use, good to use, so you can be pretty sure that it will work well. Or if you have a significant number of users that say, this is not good, I don't understand this project, a product, or it takes them enormous amounts of time and effort to fulfill a task, then you know that you need to go back and redesign your human-machine interface. Usability studies make decisions easier. So if you're not really sure, is version A better or version B better? Or are components of A better than components of B better? Then a usability study makes your decision-making easier. You say, okay, we had 80% saying that the graphic design of A is better and that the interaction design of B is better, so we combine these both and then we have the best of both worlds. So that is always a good way to make good decisions. If you design an HMI, very often critics pop up, and HMIs, human machine interfaces, are visible, they're attachable, and everybody has an opinion. Every CEO, CTO, every development director, every marketing guy, they all have an opinion, and some of them have communicate that in a very strong way. And with empirical data, you can say, hey, you may like this and it may be good for you, but we found out that 75% of users will not like it. So you can discuss on a solid ground with critics and with people that want to bring in their personal opinions, their personal views into an HMI development. And with that, you gain acceptance in your organization, at your client, and say, okay, so we have this larger amount of acceptance that, yeah, is based on empirical data, it's a solid ground, and let's do it like this. It increases the usage, it increases the acceptance of your product, it improves conversion rates, for example. So there are studies showing that you have enormous amounts of growth in conversion rates. And with that increases your revenues. If you have, for example, an app where you sell something in, or a website with a web shop where you sell things. So you have simply better results. Now, how do you do this one? And you have six steps in this, in setting up and conducting and analyzing a usability study. So the first one is identification. Second is preparation, then data collection, data analysis, reporting, and your learnings. I will run through all these steps, step by step, tell you what is to be done in here, what is to be done in there, and what are the activities you can take. And this seems to be a little like a waterfall model, which it actually is in a way. So you cannot do data collection without a preparation or an identification, or it's very hard to conduct a data analysis if you have not performed a data collection up front. The points reporting and learning are things you can already start earlier, so it's not a sheer waterfall, but basically one step after the other, and then you have the chance to get a good result out of this. Let's start with the first step, what I call identification. The question is, what do you test? If you have a very complex HMI, a huge web shop, or an automotive navigation system, there is a limited number of functions, but the number may be very high, and you cannot test everything in this. So the question is, what do you test? What is the criteria that you use to select the right tasks, the right sub-functions, the right activities? How do you do this? And the problem is, if you don't test it, you won't get any results on this. For an example, if you have a serious bug in your sound settings in an automotive navigation system, and you test the navigation only, you will never find out that you have a serious problems in the sound settings. So one point is that you identify the most used functions. Maybe you have older systems out on the market, maybe you have older studies, maybe you have market research, and you know which are the most used functions of your system. Or you can imagine it, you can derive it from discussions with sales or with users. So you say, okay, these functions are the most used ones, so we're going to test them. And I highly recommend to always test the most used functions, to say, okay, we are on the safe side because we have tested them. You can identify the most critical functions. If you have something safety related, then you have to test this. If you have if your device is anyhow critical in a process, you need to test exactly this one. So finding out, maybe it is not the most used function, but it is a critical function that needs to be performed flawlessly to, for example, ensure the quality of a production process or of driving in a car. So you have to look at the most critical ones. Then you can identify so-called bottlenecks, which is very similar to the critical functions, but are there maybe processes or parts of interaction processes that everybody has to run through, that you will use all the time, for example, typing in a text or a selection out of a long list? Does this happen very often in the interaction? Then you can test this one. You can test the points in an HMI that are discussed most. So you're in the development process and you will not be alone. And then you find out, hey, there's a lot of discussion between different parties. Product management says this. The developer says that. The designer says something totally different on a certain aspect of a system. Test these points, that you get a decision on this. As I said, usability studies are a solid ground to stand on to make decisions. And if you find out, all right, there everybody is discussing about the sound settings in your device, go out, test them, and say, okay, solution A is better than B and C. And so you have the chance to cut down the discussion and say, we have scientific data, we have empirical data that proves that this solution is better than the others. One problem when the identification is that in most of the settings of a usability study, you will test the first contact. In the automotive industry, we always call this the rental car situation. You get a rental car at a rental car company, get into it, you want to drive with it, and now you're confronted with a navigation you have never used before. So it's this first contact. And if you invite people into your lab and let them work with this navigation, you have pretty much this situation. And you get good information about this first contact, the first use, the initial interaction that you have. We know that in long-term use, people develop different views on HMIs. It may be hard to use a certain technology the first time, but if you use it long-term, if you learn it, if you have more experience with a certain product, this view may change. So the problem in this early phase is you usually get this first contact thing, but you can think about collecting information about long-term use. With this one, you need a different kind of study. You need to give users a product for a week or 3 weeks or 3 months or half a year, and then ask them again to do certain tests. And again, you have to find out, what is my core question? Do I have a website where people jump on and need to make decisions fast and need to, or should buy things on the first contact? Then the first contact approach is the correct one. If you want to test an automotive navigation system that people may use 2 or 3 years, you should have a look at the long-term use as well. All right, first phase, identification. Find out, what do you want to test and how do you want to test it? Then you get into the preparation phase. First of all, you should decide, what type of study do I want to do? And one decision is, do you want to have a comparative study or do you want to have a non-comparative study? Comparative study means that you have more than one product, more than one version of your HMI, more than one thing that you test. For example, if you have a car, you have your own navigation system, and then you have your two most important competitor cars, and you test this. Or if you want to develop an app, you may have 3 different versions or 5 different versions of an app. And then users come in and test these different versions and tell you, well, A is better than B, but the best one is C. So you have users can compare. And usually I recommend to run comparative studies. First of all, if you get the result that a user needs 25 seconds to solve this task, you don't really know, is this good or bad? But if you say, okay, I have the best performing HMI on the market here, the most accepted, and users need only 12 seconds to solve this task, and in my system, they need 25 seconds, you know that you have a serious problem in there, because you can compare it. Plus that it is easier for your participants to talk about this, to compare this, to build a picture. So that you say, okay, if you ask them after that, maybe in an interview, and ask, how did you like it? And they say, yeah, it's okay. What does it mean? But if they can say, I really loved version C because, and A was also pretty good, but I hated B because, then they can compare and it is easier to discuss about this. But there are good reasons for a non-comparative study if you, for example, have a very complex product, if it is very innovative, if you do not have any real competitors out there, then maybe a non-comparative study may be also pretty good. So this is one of the initial decisions that you need to make. Another one is, and I will talk in the next minutes about this one, whether you want to have a lab study, a field study, or an ethnographic study. Again, the kind of study, the type of study that you want to make, an early decision. Once you have done this, you need to book, particularly if you work in a larger organization, in a big company or a university, think that you may need to make reservations for labs and equipment. If you have only one lab, one usability lab, and it's booked for the next 6 months, then you have a problem if you need to deliver in 3 months. So you need to find alternatives. And the same with the equipment. Maybe you need an iMovement recording equipment. You may need certain cameras, whatever, to record your data. You also need to book this one. So very often I had the situation that people showed up and said, hey, I need to have a result in 2 weeks and I need a lab. And then we needed to find out, okay, there is no open lab space in the next 2 weeks. So you have a problem on this one. Once you have selected your devices, your laboratory set up, and your systems, then do training. It is super important that you, if you lead a study, if you run a study, you need to be safe in what to do. You need to know exactly how to do this. I mean, it's most embarrassing and highly irritating if you sit in front of your participants and say, oh, now I need to start the recording. Where's the button? I don't know where this, whoops, I did something wrong here. And oh, what happened now? I think I destroyed everything. I mean, that is not professional. And we don't want to have this. Then think about who are your participants and invite them. If you have a certain user group, like, for example, pilots or medical doctors that you want to test, if you have a device for this target group, it may be very difficult to find them and to convince them that they should participate in the study. And if you want to have just like everyone, maybe in an automotive study, then you need to find out, okay, do I want to have a more younger user group, an older user group, more a male or female user group, more an experienced or less experienced user group? So you need to think about this. And the more, let's say, exotic, the more unusual your user group is, the more important it is to start very early with the recruiting of your participants. Then you come to the point where you need to formulate your tasks. As we said, a usability study is that you formulate tasks. For example, type in Berlin Brandenburg Gate into the navigation system. So this could be a task. And you need to formulate this one. And this depends on the identification work you did. Where are your bottlenecks? What is the most used functions? What is the critical function? What is the thing we discuss a lot about? And you need to formulate your tasks in a way that users will run through this, let's say, problem room, through this bottleneck, through the point, the situation in the HMI where you believe there may be a problem. So you need to formulate these tasks. And the problem with this is that you need to be very careful in doing this. For example, if you say, type in or navigate to Berlin Brandenburg Gate and use shortest route. Then with the expression shortest route, you already give the solution because there is a button, maybe there is a button in your navigation system saying shortest route, which will give the solution. And then you're not really testing your HMI anymore. You're just finding out whether your participants are really listening to you, what you tell them. And with that, you should maybe make a scenario. Say, okay, you want to travel to Berlin to the Brandenburg Gate, and You don't want to waste any fuel, but you have more than enough time. And so please now select and optimize a route according to this. So this could be a way of formulating a task. Then create a hypothesis. If you want to do statistical analysis, you need some kind of statistical hypothesis to test it. Then select the methods for data analysis. And I will talk about this later, what methods we have, what different levels to measure on we have. So make a package of methods and test it. And then do test runs. It's like the training I talked about. Do test runs. Make yourself familiar with the environment. Be the boss there. Have control over the entire data collection process, from welcoming your participants to giving the instructions, to starting the measurement equipment, down to the interviews that you may make at the very end. And then you have to the end of the procedure. So you have test this. And this, by the way, is a great opportunity to get your boss in or your client in. I will talk about this one at the very end. But then they know exactly what you do in the lab, what you do, how the data collection runs. And I had a boss at one of my very first positions, and he said, whatever study you run, I want to be a participant. I want to be on the other side. I want to know what you do, how you collect the data, so that I know what you did, so that it's easier for me to interpret the data, to rate it, and to communicate this into our company. And this is a very good idea. So do this, and do this during your dry runs, during your test runs, not during your data collection. I talked about the different types of studies. We talked about comparative versus non-comparative. And then there are three different types of study, basic types of studies, and all of them have advantages and disadvantages. And you have to make a decision pretty early, what kind of study do you need? Sometimes it's obvious. It's okay, I need this kind of study. But sometimes there is a lot of discussion required, a lot of thinking required, analysis required. What kind of study do I need to do? First one is lab study, laboratory study, where you create a artificial situation in a laboratory and collect your data there. The second one is the field study, where you go out in the field, but still in a pretty controlled situation and collect data there. And then you have the ethnographic studies, where you go out and just watch people using devices somewhere in the field. Okay, let's go through these three types, lab study, field study, and ethnographic study, step by step. Let's start with a lab study. The lab study is, as the name says, done in a laboratory. So it is a laboratory situation, or maybe you even have usability labs in your company or your organization, or your client has them. Then you can use them. You have a very controlled environment. You can control everything. You can control the light. You can control the noise. You can control the time. You can control your data collection. You can, if you have a driving simulator, for example, which is also a laboratory situation, you can say, okay, whenever you drive faster than 50 miles per hour, then I have a deer jumping onto the road, or you can have a follow-up car where you say, okay, don't be closer than 2 seconds. And if the distance is smaller than 2 seconds to the car in front of you, then the car in front of you accelerates. Yeah, so you have this situation. You can control any aspect of the study. And this is the big advantage that you have this one. You have a control over the entire situation. This makes the data that you collect very comparable. So every participant had this deer jumping on the road. Every participant had a very noisy interaction situation. Every participant had a very dark or a very bright interaction situation. So you can control this. The disadvantage is you create a very artificial situation. So your participants will know, all right, I'm here in a laboratory and I didn't know this environment and it's all a bit creepy. Now, everybody is watching me. There is somebody using a camera to record whatever I do. And this film, this little film will be available for the next 100 years. And everybody can see whatever mistakes I'm doing. So it is this, I call this the lab rat phenomenon. So that users are aware that they are in this laboratory, in this artificial situation, and that you have, one example, if you measure the heart rate, for example, you don't know is the heart rate higher because the HMI is too complex or because your participant is very nervous due to the lab situation he or she is in. Users are forced in a lab situation to perform actions they in reality may not perform. So if you have a driving simulator and you say, all right, you drive on this highway and you drive there with 80 miles per hour and you say, okay, now please make a phone call. There are humans out there that will never make a phone call out of a car. But you force them into it. And so this may distort your data at the very end if you say in this situation, hey, please do this for me. And they will do this. I mean, if you are leading such a study and you're a serious person, and they will do this for you. But they will do this against their usual habits and they will do this against their own, let's say, will or intentions. This is one of the big problems in the lab situations. But you can collect very comparable data, very reliable data, very good data, and you can run lab studies with prototypes. You can even run them with paper and pencil prototypes. You can, if you have maybe a menu tree on a sheet of paper, you can even run a lab study with this very early stages of your development and collect data on this. So the lab study is more or less the standard. It is the when people talk about usability studies, they very often or usually think about lab studies, and it is the standard, as I said, due to the very good data quality that you gain out of it. This is the end of the first part of this episode on usability testing here in the Human Technology Podcast. In 2 weeks, there will be the second round. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, beta-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email under podcast@beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time. Take care and stay healthy.